And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you for listening, for praying for us, for supporting us. We really appreciate it. I hope you are having an absolutely wonderful day. Weather where I am is gorgeous. It's sunny. I'm not sure how humid it is because I haven't had an opportunity to get out, but I'm looking forward to things getting a little less humid as we get further into the summer, as summer starts to wind down, because I really love getting outside, but I can't do that. I don't like doing that, frankly, when it's humid and it's sticky and it's just, you know, that's just not my cup of tea. But once the weather starts to cool down a little bit and the humidity drops, oh, just love it. So I hope wherever you are, you're enjoying a great day right now. You know, this past weekend, I was up in the northwest coast of Oregon, and the weather was gorgeous, folks. I mean, we were on the ocean, and there was a nice cool breeze blowing off the ocean. The sun was shining. Trees and grass and flowers everywhere. It was absolutely gorgeous. As I've said before, this country is just beautiful. You know, it really is. Wherever you go, I live in the state of Virginia. Virginia is absolutely gorgeous. And you've got all kinds. You've got from the beaches of Virginia Beach to the mountains of Southwest Virginia, to the Shenandoah Valley, which is just a hilly paradise. It's the whole country is just beautiful. So wherever you are, I hope you're enjoying yourself. Now, having said that, for those of you in the Texas, Louisiana area, they say Hurricane Laura is bearing down on you. This thing could be as high as a Category 3, which is a very serious hurricane. So we're praying for you and trust that you will take steps to make sure that you are safe to get through this, even if you have to evacuate where you are. But please take whatever steps are necessary to secure your safety and the safety of your family. And in the meantime, we will be praying for you and praying that this thing will head on out to the ocean somewhere rather than doing damage on land. I think it's a couple of days more. It's not until Thursday when it's scheduled to hit. The meteorologists are forecasting that it's going to hit, but they've been wrong before. So I would take the precautions necessary, of course. But let's pray for the safety and security of those who are in the eye and right now in the line of this hurricane's movement. You know, I've been watching, of course, as much of the Republican National Convention activities as I could. Thought I was going to be there for that, but the governor of North Carolina closed it down, stopped it, and then Florida was not, we were simply not able to go through with Florida, which I wondered about anyway, because it takes a year to plan these things, and to suddenly have to regroup within weeks is an almost impossible task. I mean, it's a gargantuan task, but as it turns out, it just didn't come off anyway. The president canceled it, but a small group is meeting in Charlotte. I think about 330 people somewhere in there are meeting. And I missed that. I now wish I had taken steps to be sure I could go. But on the other hand, I do have this consolation prize, and it's a big one, that I get to spend time here with you reflecting on what's going on there. And doing my program from there, well, I was planning to do that, would have been a lot more difficult. That would have been a challenge, but I was planning to do that anyway because I was going to be bringing you up to date on the various activities. Well, while that's all going on, I'm going to, in the next segment, share with you a segment that is longer than I would normally play, but I just think it's so powerful and so important that I want you to hear it. But in the meantime, Joe Biden, in answering a reporter's question about why he chose Kamala Harris, gave an interesting answer, and he's used this phrase before, in which he quoted Mao Zedong. why did you choose Kamala Harris? Well, I wanted a vice president that looked like America or something like that. I mean, how does Kamala Harris look like America? Americans look all kinds of ways. That's, you know, these people just say such stupid stuff that doesn't make a bit of sense. But nevertheless, that's what he said. And then he says, and women are 51% of the country. As that old expression goes, women hold up half the sky. Well, what old expression? The only old expression that is comes from Mao Zedong. That is not an American expression. It is a Mao Zedong expression. And this is the second or third time that Biden has used it. And what that tells me is that, you know, the Bible says out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. What that tells me is that this man is really imbued with the philosophy of Mao, that Mao's an important figure in his life, because if he weren't, he wouldn't quote him. Knowing that the man is one of the worst mass murderers in the history of mankind, he definitely wouldn't quote him. But the fact that he can quote him as if he's someone to be admired and someone to be listened to and someone to be referenced tells you there's something very deeply wrong in Biden's heart. I've told you all before, remember they put Mao Zedong's picture on the Christmas tree of the Obamas in the White House? And remember Anita Dunn, his former communications director, said that she looked to Mao Zedong as a source of wisdom. And quoted him, and I mean, really? Mao Zedong? Or Mao Zedong? I'm not trying to make a mountain out of a molehill here, but I really do believe this. If you're talking and referencing, talking about and referencing Mao Zedong, that tells me a lot about you, if you're doing that with admiration. Anita Dunn famously said he was one of her favorite political philosophers. Really? Really? Mao? Mao? And she quoted him as saying, "You fight your war, I'll fight mine." Mao? Yeah. Most estimates are he killed about 65 million Chinese. Starved some, murdered some, purged some. He did whatever he needed to do to consolidate power. The man was a monster. He was a monster, and they're quoting him. And yet, they always want to accuse this president of being a quote-unquote a Hitler. And there's nothing Hitlerian about President Donald Trump. President Donald Trump loves the American people. I really believe loves our country, loves the American people, and simply wants to do what's good and best for us. Adolf Hitler hated the German people, and he made that clear when it was obvious that the war would be lost and many Germans would die. He said they deserve it. If they weren't capable of winning this war, they deserve to die. This man was full of hatred. I really believe Donald Trump has a tremendous amount of love and affection for our country and for our people. But that aside, I don't hear Donald Trump quoting Hitler, but quoting Mao? And the clip we're going to listen to on the other side of the first break of the program really kind of answers this. See, because I'm convinced of this, folks, it is no accident that they put Mao up on a Christmas tree, that their communications director quotes Mao and speaks admiringly of Mao as one of her favorite philosophers, and that the would-be president of the United States on the Democrat side quotes Mao. I don't think any of that is an accident. I think they have a romantic view and a predisposition to love these totalitarian communist leaders. And you know what that tells me? These are not the kind of people who should have power. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
One striking difference between Europe and America has been the temptation many European countries to fall into totalitarianism. Dennis Prager reminds us that after World War I, many of these countries embraced communism, fascism, or Nazism, and there's a very good reason why. The primary beliefs that give rise to meaning in life were patriotism and the Judeo-Christian religion. The senseless slaughter during the Great War, as it was called, challenged both of these foundations. National identity was seen as the cause of the war, and religion was deemed unnecessary and perhaps a relic of the past. This void was left filled with communism in Russia, fascism in Italy, and Nazism in Germany. In the U.S., there were communists and many other activists promoting their totalitarian temptations, but they never took root. Americans did not lose their faith in religion, especially in Christianity. Patriotism not only flourished, but Dennis Prager reminds us that the words "under God" were even inserted into the Pledge of Allegiance recited daily in American schools. But the baby boomers born after World War II began to challenge God and country. These students were indoctrinated into secularism and anti-Americanism. The generations that followed them grew up in a country that was less religious and more likely to criticize America's government and history. Today we have a void that is similar to the one found in Europe a century ago. Most likely the totalitarian temptation today will be a leftist totalitarianism that promotes leftist political correctness and bans free speech and religion. There are many reasons to pray for a spiritual revival, but one of the more important reasons is to prevent this country from falling for the totalitarian temptation. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Loneliness, go to viewpoints.info/loneliness. That's viewpoints.info/loneliness.
Here's Don Shank with today's global update from the Tide Ministry, sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ on the radio in the languages people were born to speak.
The threat of kidnappings is prevalent in Nigeria, where thousands of Christians are facing persecution as they trust in and glorify God with encouragement from the Tide Ministry's Gospel Radio Project. One listener wrote, "A month ago, my younger sister was kidnapped with her daughter. I prayed without ceasing, sewed without ceasing, evangelized without ceasing, danced without ceasing, and today God has set my sister and her daughter free. I came to give him all the glory." A high crime rate, poverty, unemployment, plus tribal and religious tension create dangerous living conditions. Christians often become easy targets because they stand in contrast to the surrounding suspicion and violence. Nigerian Christians desperately need our prayer and support.
To read more inspiring stories about how Jesus is touching lives through the Tide Radio Ministry in Nigeria, visit thetide.org. That's thetide.org.
Brian Fisher here. The DNC was a gloomy affair. How was the Republican convention stacking up? Proof of mail-in chaos from Detroit. The man who was shot in Kenosha, Wisconsin, had a long rap sheet and was wanted for domestic violence. And Chris the Body Cuomo explains why CNN had no need to fact-check the DNC. Next on Focal Point.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
So while Joe Biden is quoting Mao Zedong, and the Republican National Convention is going on, not only is the president speaking, of course, but he has various guest speakers. One of them is a gentleman named Maximo Alvarez, who escaped communist Cuba. And so while Joe Biden is quoting Mao, Maximo Alvarez is making clear why socialism and communism are not the way. Now, this is a little longer clip than I would normally use, but I think you will find that this is worth hearing. So bear with us and drink this in. And when we come back, I've got a couple of other comments to make, and I want to start taking your calls. Here's Maximo Alvarez.
Our president is just another family man, a friend, and most important, our elected commander-in-chief who puts America first. Keep in mind, the other guy running for president is mostly concerned about power. Yes, power for them, but not for the benefit of all Americans. I'm speaking to you today because I have seen people like this before. I've seen movements like this before. I've seen ideas like this before. And I am here to tell you, we cannot let them take over our country. I heard the promises of Fidel Castro, and I can never forget all those who grew up around me, who looked like me, who suffered and starved and died because they believed those empty promises. They swallowed the communist poison pill. If you have a chance, go to the Freedom Tower in Miami. Stop and listen. You can still hear the sounds of those broken promises. It is the sound of waves in the ocean carrying families clinging to pieces of wood. Families with children who can't swim, but willing to risk everything to reach this blessed land. It is the sound of tears hitting the paper of an application to become an American citizen. Most heard and liked the promises, but soon after, they experienced the reality. Look at them, listen to them, learn the truth. Those false promises spread the wealth. Free education, free health care, defund the police, trust the socialist state more than your family and your community. They don't sound radical to my ears. They sound familiar. And Fidel Castro was asked if he was a communist. He said he was a Roman Catholic. He knew he had to hide the truth. But the country I was born in is gone, totally destroyed. When I watch the news in Seattle, Chicago, Portland, and other cities, when I see the history being rewritten, when I hear the promises, I hear echoes of the former life I never wanted to hear again. I see shadows I thought I had outrun. My parents only wanted one person to decide my fate, me. Not some party member, not some government official, not some bureaucrat. In America, I would decide my own future. I am so grateful to America, the place where I was able to build my American dream through hard work and determination. President Trump knows that the American story was written by people just like you and I, who love our country and take risks to build a future for our families and neighbors. I may be a Cuban born, but I am 100% American. This is the greatest country in the world. And I said this before, if I gave away everything that I have today, it would not equal 1% of what I was given when I came to this great country of ours. The gift of freedom. Right now, it is up to us to decide our fate and to choose freedom over oppression. President Trump, he's fighting the forces of anarchy and communism.
Wow. You know, do you wonder why you never hear people from the left talk this way? I mean, you can hear, as his voice breaks, you can hear the emotion, the appreciation, the depth of affection that he has for this country because he knows what it is to live without liberty. He's lived it. And you've got leftists running around trying to sell us on becoming what he escaped. And I think, frankly, more than most Americans who are born here, he understands exactly what they're up to. And he is not taken in. And, you know, that ought to sound the alarm for all of us when someone who has experience. Now, I'm not talking about reading about socialism or reading about communism or deciding on an intellectual level to reject it. I'm talking about someone who has lived it and been forced to escape it and has come to this country and seen firsthand the contrast, understands the difference between what they escaped, what he escaped, and what he has now inherited. That to me is an unassailable argument. You can't really debate that. You simply can't checkmate that. Because he knows not only on an intellectual level, but on a visceral level, the difference between freedom and oppression. And knows America is not a nation of oppression. America is a nation of freedom. I mean, but you can have people born and raised here running around talking about America as if it's the worst place in the world, a nation of exploitation and oppression and imperialism and racism and sexism and homophobia and Islamophobia, and they just on and on and on with the negative adjectives about our country. So while Joe Biden, who carries the banner for the Democrat Party, quotes Mao Zedong, the President of the United States puts up at the convention for the Republicans a man who has actually escaped the oppression of socialism and understands the lies and the deception, the manipulation to get people to buy into it, the promises that are made that are absolutely never kept. In fact, they got exactly the opposite of what they were promised. And then you have these leftists running around telling us how wonderful Cuba is because, as Bill de Blasio said, it was Bernie Sanders. Well, they raised the literacy level. So basically, what he's saying is you can read your death warrant now when they decide to come after you because you're simply not being a good, faithful communist, a good member of the party. You all know that a lot of boxers come from Cuba, and there is a boxer that I used to follow. I haven't seen much of him because I haven't frankly been watching much of it these days, but I used to follow boxing fairly closely. And it was a boxer from Cuba named Rigon Diao. Some of you who are boxing fans probably know who I'm talking about. But he escaped from Cuba. But before he did, he made an attempt to escape, and he was caught. And he didn't have much, but he was a boxer, and he knew that if he could come to America, he could have a life for himself, and maybe his gift, his talent, would actually prosper him and prosper his family. But of course, you can't leave Cuba. Unlike America, all these people complaining, you know, we need to remind them that, you know, you can leave here anytime you want. But of course, you can't leave a communist country anytime you want. You're not free to leave. You have to be given permission to leave. And he was not given permission because they wanted to keep him as a kind of slave for their boxing program. And so Rigon Diao, when he tried to escape the first time, the only possession that he had, the only thing that actually belonged to him, was a bicycle. And after his first attempted escape, they took that. And in addition, they told all of his neighbors, I've heard him tell the story, they told all of his neighbors to shun him because he was not a good communist. And so he was left completely isolated. But he just kept boxing, just kept fighting, and eventually things calmed down, and he got another opportunity, and that time he succeeded and finally escaped communist Cuba. And yet, we got people running around telling us how much we should admire Fidel Castro and Mao Zedong and all of these absolutely monstrous murderers, Che Guevara. Folks, we'll be back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for my turn, Don Weilman.
In life, a person should be sure that what he's working toward is what he wants. Too many times a person spends his life working toward a goal, and then when he reaches the goal, discovers that he didn't really want what he got. Marjorie Meriwether Post, who was sometimes referred to as Grand Dame Post, spent much of her 86 years climbing society's ladder. She became one of the nation's leading society queens. However, toward the end of her life, she expressed regrets at having spent so much time at the top. At one of the last parties she held, while surrounded by gushing women, she leaned over to a friend and confided, "To think I worked 50 years just to have these," and she called the ladies present a name, "bow and scrape to me." One of the cruel tricks which life plays on us is to give us that which we ask for. And many times we discover that the more we get of what we want, the less we want of what we get. In ancient Greek mythology, there was a story of Midas. Midas had done the gods a favor, and his reward was that any one wish he had would be fulfilled. Midas wished that everything he touched would turn to gold. Well, his wish was fulfilled, but he nearly starved to death before he got it changed. Some time ago, there was a special program on television about several bright young executives who were apparently on their way up in the business world. The report told how, one by one, they had turned their backs on the climb to the top and accepted jobs paying much less. The more they got of what they wanted, the less they wanted what they got. A person should be sure, before he sets out working toward something, that what he is working toward is what he wants. For the chances are pretty good that he'll get what he wants. To me, the most terrible frustration life could give would be to spend your whole life in pursuit of something, and then when you finally get it, discover that it wasn't worth pursuing at all. I remember reading a story about a restless young boy who wanted to be free, away from the restraints and restrictions of his father. So, he left home one day in a sullen mood, and headed toward a place where he could do as he pleased. But the story went on to point out that the more he did of what he wanted, the less he wanted to do what he did. And then one day he came back home to do something worthwhile, to be the son of his father. Make sure that what you're working for in life is worth working for. Give it close examination before you decide to invest your life pursuing it. Weigh it on the scales of life. Compare it with the virtues of love and service. Don't waste your life in pursuit of that which you do not want. I know a few disappointments in life that would be more crushing than working for something and getting it, only to discover it wasn't really what you wanted at all.
This has been My Turn with Don Weilman, a production of the American Family Association.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And we're back. Let me add this, and then I want to take your calls. 888-589-8840. How do you affect a revolution in a country as wealthy as ours, as free as ours, as prosperous as ours, with as much opportunity as ours? Well, you find something that will allow you to engender bitterness and hatred and anger and resentment and frustration, real or imagined. And I believe that that's how the left is using race today. They're using race as their substitute for class warfare, as Marx theorized it. Because he thought that you could bring about the revolution through class warfare, but it just simply doesn't work in a country as free and open and prosperous as the United States of America. See, Marx, he couldn't quite understand the existence of a nation like ours. We kind of busted his theory all up. But if you can reuse the resentment of race then maybe you can keep the theory alive on a different basis, which is instead of class warfare, racial conflict. Now, as you all know, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, I guess Monday night, or was it Sunday night? Let me just make sure I got this straight here. There was a shooting of a young man in some kind of conflict with police, Jacob Blake, and he was shot 7 times, but he's not dead, at least not the last I've heard. Something could have happened here recently because he is in intensive care, but so far he has survived the shooting. Now, of course, riots had broken out, and you know, the whole thing has started all over again, except now it's in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and they are burning down buildings and you name it, torching cars and demonstrating violently and all of that. So the same thing is happening all over again now in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Now, I've looked at the videos, looked at 2 of them, and read the reports of what happened. Now, here's the first thing I always say about this, and this is exactly what Black Lives Matter and these far-left idiots funded by George Soros don't understand. Wait for the facts. Oh, I saw the video. No, wait for the facts. Because the video may tell you something, but it doesn't tell you everything. Now, I know we were all taken aback by the treatment you all know exactly what I'm talking about. It'll snap back. But of that gentleman who had the knee of that police officer on his neck. And I know the left will go crazy if I don't, because they'll say, see, he really doesn't care. But folks, I just got a lot of different things here running around in my head. But that was obvious to us all that there's something wrong there. But even there, wait for the facts before you come to an ultimate conclusion, because you just don't know. You don't know that you've seen every angle on the thing. You don't know that you've seen, you know, all aspects of it. George Floyd was the guy's name. You just don't know. You just don't know until all the facts are in. So don't, you know, I mean, it did look bad. And as far as we know, it is bad. But still, we have a process in this country for reaching legal conclusions about things. And that process ought to be allowed to run its course. Now, having looked at what happened to this gentleman, having looked at the shooting, I would say this, 2 things. One is he had a tussle, Jacob Blake, had a tussle with the police officers, apparently broke away from them and started walking toward his car. They're trying to get him to come back and to submit to an arrest, I guess. And they say he was trying to break up a domestic dispute between 2 women. And that much we don't see. But there are some pictures showing him having a kind of tussle with the police and then sort of getting up off the ground and walking away from them when they're trying to get him to stop and submit to their authority. He walks around. I believe that he opens the door of his car. Don't hold me to that, but I'm pretty sure he actually opens the door. It might have been open already, but at the very least, I can say this without any hesitation at all. To my eye, it does not appear that he is trying to get into the car. It appears to me that he is reaching for something in the car. Because he bends over and his head kind of goes into the car with his body going first. And that's not the way we get into a car. The way we get into a car is we put our leg into the car first. Our body is upright and then we ease into the seat. That is not what he did. He reached over. And my thought was, from my eye, I'm not there, but it looked to me like he was reaching for something. It looked to me like he was reaching for something. Now, for those of you who know anything about firearms, if you've done any training with firearms and so forth, because I'm a shooter, and I've done dynamic training, and one of the first things that you learn in dynamic training is how quickly things develop. Now, folks, I don't know. They haven't said yet whether there was a gun in the car. They haven't said. And I don't know whether we can conclude that there was not one or there was one. I'm not sure. But I can tell you this. That officer probably couldn't see what he was reaching for. And at that point, with the guy having resisted, with the guy having refused to stop, refused to turn around, and he goes in and reaches into his car, at that time, that officer's got a split-second decision to make. And it only takes a split second, because if, in fact, there's a gun in that car, all he's got to do is pick that gun up, turn, and within literally a split second, I mean a fraction of a second, he could gun that officer down and then engage the other one if he had to. So that officer has got to decide, If he doesn't have a gun, I'm going to be okay. But if he does, I'm going to be dead. Because he could shoot me while I'm trying to figure it out. And maybe from all of his behavior and all of his actions, he may have decided there's got to be something in there that he's reaching for. I can't imagine anything else. I'm just speculating now. But from the appearance of it, what would I do if I were in that situation? Well, it would be hard to just wait and see, because you could be dead while you're waiting to see. You know how many police officers have been gunned down standing outside somebody's car waiting to see? I mean, shot dead on the spot waiting to see? So look, here again, I am withholding final judgment on this until we get more of the facts, because I may be completely wrong, but I'm telling you, this is what it looked like to me. And here's the final thing I'll say, and then I want to see if I can get at least one call in before we go to the break and then start taking your calls when we come back. When are we going to start telling these young people to stop fighting cops? To just stop fighting them and start cooperating with them? I mean, at what point are we going to realize if you start fighting with a cop and resisting arrest, that's not going to turn out well for you? But oh, no, it's all the cop's fault. So no matter what somebody does, it's the cop's fault. I mean, here again, if this kid had just stopped and never moved any further, the cop said stop, and he stopped, he'd be alive. He's still alive, thank God. But he wouldn't have been shot. But you could see the cop pulling on his shirt, trying to get him to stop and turn around, and he won't do it. And then he reaches into the car, and he did not look to me like he was getting into the car. It looked like he was reaching into the car for something. Well, I won't get one in, but I'll come right back and start taking calls as soon as we get back. 888-589-8840. But this is what the mouths of the world will use to try to destabilize and divide and destroy this country. And what we better do is use some godly wisdom to assess these things rather than jumping to conclusions and starting to tear stuff up. Back in a moment.
The Stand is a site addressing culture, promoting faith, and defending family. With blogs like, Someday is Not on the Calendar.
How many people whose bodies lie in the grave today once said, someday I will give my life to Jesus and live for him. Oh, how they wish that they could have one more day that would become that someday.
Pastor Joseph Parker highlights the importance of today. Read The Stand. Be inspired. Add your comments at afa.net/thestand.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. Right now, our country is in trouble, and people are scared, people are afraid, and we see the violence and the injustices that are taking place. Only God can change this. This is a problem of the human heart.
If you'd like to pray with someone, call us any time of the day or night at 888-388-2683. 888-388-2683.
Call that number right now. We've got someone who will pray with you, talk with you, encourage you. God bless.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than eight decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as one Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
I have a large Jewish contingent in my practice, and I'm frequently asked to go to bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs.
Here's Dr. Robert Hamilton on Focus on the Family Minute.
And this young man was 13. He was reading the Torah. And before the whole ceremony began, the mother stood up in the synagogue, and she looked around, and she's a very articulate woman. And she said, you know, I'm looking around here. And she says, I'm looking around, and I only knew 20% of you before we had a child. You know, certainly family and friends. But she goes, I think about what my son Ryan has brought to my life. Not only has he brought the joy of having a child, but he's brought all of you. And it was a very touching moment. And I thought, wow, this is profound. This is what children do to our lives. They bring us to new dimensions.
More from Dr. Hamilton at FamilyMinute.org.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. The number is 888-589-8840. I put plenty on the table. Let's go to your calls. Let's start with Jane. Jane, are you in Oregon?
I am.
Wow. Well, good to hear from you from way out there. I just left there a few days ago.
Oh, where were you?
Well, I started in Portland and ended up in, I think it's pronounced Yakutsk, up on the coast, way up on the northwest coast.
Portland's a pain, but the rest of it's probably nice.
It was beautiful. The drive up the coast was absolutely gorgeous. Hey, Jane, let me ask you, are you listening live streamed?
No, on the radio. We have a radio station out here.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm really glad
to
hear that.
And I'm in Eastern Oregon. We're in Podunk.
Well, you know, I've heard, Jane, that you Eastern Oregonians would like to secede from Oregon and move over. Is there any truth to that?
That's true. And since you brought that up, there is something I want to say, and that's this is the second time we've done a petition to recall old Kate Brown. And somebody just said they just got word that the powers that be in Salem won't have enough personnel to count all the signatures. So all the work that they've done, the first time they did it, they kicked out enough signatures so they didn't have to, you know, go with it.
Uh-huh.
This time they were doing so many signatures that they couldn't possibly do that again. Now they say they can't handle it. And so we'll see what happens. And I think I'll call around and see if we can't get this out and maybe embarrass Oregon enough that they'll go ahead and do it.
Well, it's good to hear from you from all the way out in Oregon. So, but what did you call about today? You were going to bring up Hitler?
Yeah, well, I was glad you did, because I've been meaning to bring this out, that people are referring to the Marxist roots of Black Lives Matter and all this mayhem that's going on out there. And actually, it's more than Marxist. It's Hitlerian. I made some notes here. Hitler had an Antifa-like Hitler Youth.
Yep.
They had riots in Germany before he took over there, and then they had riots in Vienna, Austria, before he took over there. The Hitler Youth attacked and looted the Catholic cardinal's residence. And I'll give you these references. so you can see this stuff if you want to. They had standards like promises, you know, of all the great things that's going to be done. They burned government buildings before mm-hmm. That was before Hitler took over, or maybe just soon after he did, or was in the process of it. And of course, he stifled critics and destroyed critics. Where I got this, there was a documentary which I probably more recent. It's called Hitler: The Rise of Evil. And then two documentaries that are World War II vintage. One of them is After Mein Kampf, and the third one is The Nazi Strike. And one of those actually has pictures of the Hitler youth putting ladders up, breaking the windows, and going into the cardinal's residence and pitching out all the valuables to the other youth. And they're all kids. They look like they're maybe 16 to 25, something like that. I mean, it sure sounds like Antifa to me.
Well, look, Jane, the fact of the matter is Hitler was a leftist, and he began with the German Workers' Party. In fact, he was responsible for renaming it. He considered himself a socialist. And so these folks just don't realize that this totalitarian impulse is an impulse of the left, and even fascism, which Mussolini coined the phrase. But Mussolini also began as a leftist. The only thing he added was this extreme nationalism that led him to ultimately ally with Adolf Hitler. But these people were leftists. The only reason they hated communism was because they were competing with them for power. And that's why they hated communists, because they wanted power and they didn't want to be controlled by the Communist Party. But other than that, they were leftists through and through. Hey, Jane, well, thank you so much for calling, and hello to all my friends in Oregon. Let's go to Jim in Texas. Jim, welcome.
Yes, sir. I wanted to call to give you a note of rebuke. Take it if you want. But if we sing off the enemy's song sheet, if we repeat the lies of the devil, then we're just promoting that which we say we're against. And every time, for example, you and every other AFR talk show host decides to use the term mainstream media to define the truly anti-God media, anti-American media, is promoting their agenda. They are not the mainstream, and you constantly say that in every other thing you say about them, but then you use their term to define them, contradicting your own self. Why don't you stop it and find a new way to define them rather than repeating their lies to all your listeners?
Okay. Well, Jim, we are duly rebuked. Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. Really do. Sometimes you just end up using language that you know people will understand. And so when I say mainstream media, I think everybody knows that what we mean is the liberal far left media. But hey, you know, if using a different nomenclature from time to time will help underscore how illegitimate they are, point well taken, Jim. Okay, let's go to Randy in New Hampshire. Randy, welcome.
Thanks, Bishop, for taking my call. Appreciate you talking about Wisconsin. I was watching Fox earlier. They're really getting frustrated when I was seeing some of the innuendos about them making assumptions about what happened. And as a 30-year law enforcement professional, I realized that, one, just because a person is shot in the back doesn't automatically mean it was a bad shooting. From where that officer was standing, if he saw a weapon that the guy was reaching for, that's going to be a good shooting. So we just need, like you said, take our time, let the facts come out before we make a judgment. Unfortunately, the citizens already made a judgment that it was guilty in sense of rioting and destroying people's businesses, and that's unfortunate. But I just appreciate your tone on that, and I do appreciate you, first-time caller and long-time listener. So keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Randy. Let me just ask you now, did you say that you are in law enforcement?
Yes, 30 years.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Well, look, what about the speed with which things happen? Would you just comment on that for a second? Because here again, I don't think people understand that he shot him 7 times. Well, once it's necessary to fire, the whole point is to completely eliminate the threat. And, you know, people don't realize firing seven bullets is a split-second thing. It's not like you fire and you wait 5 seconds or 10 seconds and you fire again. I mean, it happens very, very fast. Just comment on that.
Just the other day, three officers in Maryland were shot. Ask yourself, how does someone shoot three different cops? Because it happens so fast, like you said. In a second, you can fire off 2, 3, 4 rounds. And so...
Yeah.
If the threat, and it's not like TV, you shoot somebody one time and they get knocked across the room.
That's
reality. It's not physics.
Right.
It doesn't happen. And so when you ask someone, you know, why they get shot that number of times, is because, well, that's the number of times it took.
Yeah.
To stop.
Hey, listen, Randy, you stay safe out there. We pray for you, brother, and for all of your fellow officers out there putting their lives on the line. God bless you. And I want you to know that our listeners and I and so many others across this country, although the lamestream media doesn't pay much attention to what we think, I think you've got a whole lot more support out there than you do have detractors. So God bless you. Keep up the good work. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Sherry in Mississippi. Sherry, welcome.
Hi, this is Sherry from Mississippi.
Sherry.
Just heard for the first time on your AFR station, I don't know if you or a commercial, that this is Pelosi's agenda to become president. Oh, my gosh. That means if the mail-in ballots don't get counted properly by January, she's in power?
Well, the Speaker of the House is next in line to take over. I can't imagine that would happen. They couldn't. Once an election is held, she could not take over until there is she would not take over because there would be a final count. The only way I could see that happening is the president and vice president would both have to be dead. I mean, that's God forbid. So I just don't see that happening. And that may be in part because I can't imagine the nightmare of a Nancy Pelosi as president of the United States. But Sherry, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Matt in Ohio. Matt, welcome. Matt, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Matt?
Okay. I was calling to comment on something that you were talking about earlier about the different Mao quotations.
Mm-hmm.
I served in the Army National Guard for 12 years, and before we went on our deployment, we had a lot of pre-deployment briefings and just a lot of things to get us mentally prepared for going overseas. And in one of those briefings, it was a PowerPoint presentation on a lot of just self-help motivational things. And there was a quote from Mao in one of the slides. And, you know, what was surprising was there weren't very many soldiers in the audience that really caught, you know, the irony of that.
Wow. Wow. Matt, that is chilling. That is chilling. I do a conference call every Tuesday at noon Eastern time, and we had David Barton on today, and he was talking, of course, about American ignorance of history. I mean, knowing what communism has done, how in the world could any of our military people be trained using anything that Mao had to say? But that just goes to show we've got a big re-education process for our own country that needs to happen to help people understand who we are. Well, folks, that's going to do it today. God bless each and every one of you. Stay in the fight no matter what. There's no quit here, because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.